Good morning, everyone. I'd like to introduce you to Reverend Maud Robinson, who is taking today's service. Some of you already know Maud, but for those who don't, Maud has attended our church here in Dublin on and off since the 1990s. She trained as a minister in Harris Ministry College in Oxford, and has worked with congregations in the US and the UK. She's currently the minister with Underbank in Sheffield in the UK. We'll have a questions and answers opportunity after the service, so I would ask you, if you're coming back for that, to please grab your cuppa and bring it back up here to the church as quickly as possible. We'll aim to restart at about 12:15 for our questions. Thanks.
To all of you gathered here in Stephen's Green and to people joining us on the internet via the webcam, a very warm welcome to our time of celebration, reflection, and community. And as we come to this spiritual hour out of our busy week, I invite us all to take a few moments of quietness together, to invite the spirit of life and of love to be present among us and to awaken within us. As swimmers dare to lie face to the sky and water bears them, as hawks float on air and air sustains them, so would I learn to attain free fall and float into Creator Spirit's deep embrace, knowing no effort earns that all-surrounding grace. Those are words by the British-American poet Denise Levertov, and I've taken them as my text this morning, and so we'll say more about them in a while. I light our chalice, symbol of our Unitarian community worldwide. And I know we have somebody here from Transylvania with us. I also heard a couple of American accents. So it's very good to be with Unitarians, Unitarian Universalists, and those gathering with us online. We come together maybe with tired minds and bodies, with confusions and questions, uncertainties and fears. We also come together with hopes, with our passions and our ideas, with our past, with our faith, whatever it may be. We come together bringing all of who we are, trusting that in gathering here, we will be renewed, renewed for the week ahead, and that together we can work towards creating the world we long for. And we're going to stand and sing together. It's in your grey book, number 298. This is one of my favourite hymns. It's each of the verses speaks to me of things that are so important in why we gather together as Unitarians. Our senses, our reason, compassion, our conscience, and our vision. So let's sing together, "Wake Now My Senses and Hear the Earth Call." Now, this is the time where I have a time for all ages. I saw some younger folk come in, and I saw JP there. I don't know if JP, do you want to come up and have a chat with me, or would you rather stay there with your mum? He's grand there by himself. So, but you might like, you could answer me a question if you like. Do you have any pets, JP? You don't have pets. Do you like animals? How do you think you could tell if an animal trusted you? How would you tell if an animal trusted you? Do you think... A dog might come and lick you. Absolutely right. Absolutely. And in fact, where I'm staying at the moment, there's a lovely old greyhound called Lucy. She shows me she loves me by getting up on the sofa beside me and then stretching out further and further and further until I have to say, excuse me, can I have some of the sofa too? But at home, I have two pussycats. And now the way I can tell that they trust me, they don't trust me all the time, I have to tell you. I've got one little skittery one called Gracie, and she loves going in and out and in and in and out. She loves going out and roaming free in the garden. And then she comes in, and if I approach her when she's inside in the house, she'll think, oh, she's going to clip my claws, she's going to put me in a box and take me to the vet, she's going to put horrible stuff on the back of my neck. Oh, don't trust her. She sometimes runs away. Now, when I really can tell she trusts me, when I'm up in bed, it's safe up here, she doesn't have all her terrible things up here, and she'll come and she'll lie in the bed beside me, and then I'll start giving her a little scratch in her ear. And then she'll start purring. Now, there's a good sign of trust. She'll start purring. And then, as she gets even more happy and trusting, she rolls over on her back, and she gets... Oh! She doesn't look very long, but when she's trusting you, she gets long, long, long. And she stretches out, and she gives me her belly. Now, that's a way you can tell an animal trusts you, because their belly is their kind of delicate place, and she's got a lovely white belly. I can give her a big, long stroke from her throat right down, and that's real trust from a pussycat. So as I said, she doesn't trust me all the time, but when she knows that I'm relaxed and not likely to get up and get the clippers, she'll give me a good old bit of trust. So there is some way we can tell about trust, and I'll be talking a bit more about trust later. But first, I think Alison Claffey has a reading for us.
Morning, everybody. It's a 15-minute walk from my home to the Bull Wall and Bull Island, located on the north side of Dublin Bay. Bull Island is only 200 years old and evolved after the Bull Wall was built and completed in 1825. The wall was built to stop the silting in the bay, which was blocking the shipping channels. One of the surveyors who recommended the building of the wall was Captain William Bligh of the Mutiny on the Bounty fame. As you walk on Bull Island on a summer's day, you can hear the larks chirping frantically as they rise to distract you away from their nests. In poetry, larks represent new beginnings and hope. They can also symbolise nature's capacity to overcome events such as storms and also human interventions, such as the building of a wall to hold back the effects of the tide. I love that nature's response to the building of the wall was to create an island that is now a nature reserve and bird sanctuary in the city. Well, Mother Nature had to do something with all that sand, no point in wasting it. I don't think Captain Bligh would have survived the mutiny and perilous journey home from the South Pacific Ocean without hope. As our world faces the effects of global warming and climate change, I like to think that there is always hope that we can work with nature for our planet's future, such as sincerely agreeing and achieving the targets set by COP29. I'll finish, where is my real reading, the poem by Emily Dickinson, Hope is the Thing with Feathers. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest is the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chilliest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it asks to crumb of me.
Thank you so much, Alison. How perfect. As I flew in earlier in the week in from Sheffield, of course, passed over Howth Head and Bull Island, I said, here I am, I'm home. But so it was lovely to hear that, and one of my favourite poems from Emily Dickinson. And we're going to sing again. I've brought along a hymn that I don't think you know. It's on this sheet you should have received coming in. The UK, the GA, has produced a new hymn book in the last decade. I'm not exactly sure when. And there's a lot of hymns in there from hymn writers from Britain. And this is one from somebody I know quite well. She's a member of the Glasgow congregation, Leanne Mitchell. And it speaks of her great love of nature and the fact that she finds God within nature. So we're going to sing now, Spirit of Earth, Root, Stone and Tree. I'm going to speak a bit about trust today. And Hermann Hesse turned to trees to teach him about trust. This short reading comes from a book which is now unfortunately out of print. It's called Wandering, Notes and Sketches. So Hermann Hesse writes, "For me, trees have always been the most penetrating preachers. Nothing is holier, nothing is more exemplary than a beautiful, strong tree. Whoever knows how to speak to them, whoever knows how to listen to them, can learn the truth. A tree says, my strength is trust. I know nothing about my fathers. I know nothing about the 1,000 children that every year spring out of me. I live out of the secret of my seed to the very end, and I care for nothing else. I trust that God is in me. I trust that my labor is holy. Out of this trust I live. When we are stricken and cannot bear our lives any longer, then a tree has something to say to us. Be still. Be still. Look at me. Life is not easy. Life is not difficult. Those are childish thoughts. Let God speak within you, and your thoughts will grow silent. You are anxious because your path leads away from mother and home, but every step and every day lead you back again to the mother. Home is neither here nor there. Home is within you, or home is nowhere at all. So the tree rustles in the evening, when we stand uneasy before our own childish thoughts. Trees have long thoughts, just as they have longer lives than ours. They are wiser than we are. But when we have learned how to listen to trees, then the brevity and the quickness and the childlike hastiness of our thoughts can achieve an incomparable joy. Whoever has learned how to listen to trees no longer wants to be a tree. He wants to be nothing except what he or she is. That is home, and that is happiness." And so from these quick, childlike minds that keep whirling around and around, those minds that keep us busy and not really truly present, I invite you to a time of prayerfulness and reflection. And I invite you to really try to be present here and now, mindful of being in this beautiful space and with this beloved community. And I invite you to start with me by joining with me in a version of the prayer of Jesus. It's my interpretation of the prayer of Jesus, the Our Father, which will be on the back of your hymn sheet. So I invite you to pray with me using these words. Mystery of life, source of love and beauty, we stand in awe in the presence of the universe. We celebrate the joy of possibility. May we move our world closer to the dream of equity and justice. Though often distracted by material concerns, may we also plumb the depths of the spirit. May the great gifts of the earth sustain us. May the universe forgive our attachment to ego, serving self rather than the greater good. And may we, in equal measure, be forgiving. May we have strength to dispel the hopelessness which could engulf us as we work against injustice in our broken world. The strength of the universe is all about us. It abounds with power and glory beyond our greatest imaginings. Amen. Giver of being and freedom, spirit of life and of love, who touches our lives in unforeseen ways, who unsettles our ease and upsets our self-satisfaction. We wait in these moments of stillness to let the hidden processes of healing and growth do their silent work within us, and to let the quiet work of reconciliation be renewed among us. Because we know that the ultimate issues of life, healing and growth, reconciliation and renewal, cannot be forced, neither by excess of activity or by tumult of words, we seek out this stillness. We seek the quiet, the resting place of our resting hearts. Because we live with mystery, we are called to trust that which is deeper than we know, which touches our hearts, which steadies us and rekindles our spirits, which finally in faith may be named that love that has laid hold upon us and will not let us go. And so let us enter together for a few minutes into the good silence, a resting place for our restless hearts. May we remember, in the tumult of difficulties in our lives, that this process of silent waiting is always available to us, to let the hidden processes of healing and growth do their silent work within us. Thank you so much for that, Josh. Each individual must walk their own path to find their own sacred sources and sacred practices. For me, one of the most important sources of spiritual inspiration is poetry, largely by contemporary poets. Mary Oliver, Denise Levertov, some older ones, E.E. Cummings, Emily Dickinson, and older still, Rumi and Hafiz. And my Bible has become a small anthology called Soul Food. It has a wonderful selection of poets to move and to stimulate the spirit. And from it, this poem by Denise Levertov that I read earlier is in it. She's a British-American poet who lived from 1923 until 1997. As swimmers dare to lie face to the sky and water bears them, as hawks rest upon air and air sustains them, so would I learn to attain free fall and float into Creator Spirit's deep embrace, knowing no effort earns that all-surrounding grace. As swimmers dare to lie face to the sky and water bears them, I wonder if you remember learning to swim. Do you remember the first time that you trusted the water to hold you afloat? I remember it very vividly. I was probably about 7 or 8 years old, and I'd loved being in the water from a very young age, but had not yet learned to swim. My mother wasn't a swimmer, and my dad somehow just didn't get around to it. I think when we went to the beach, he sort of went for a swim himself and then flopped. Anyway, my older cousins were over visiting once, and the two families, we went for a day trip to one of our favourite picnic spots. It's a bog lake in Connemara. Apparently it was called Loch an Ilan. We used to call it our lake. Do you know, we would go there and Mum would build a fire and cook sausages, and maybe in the whole day two cars might pass by. I went there again recently. They said, you say you shouldn't go back to your favourite old places. It was exactly as I remembered it, but there were more cars passing by. And I think there was there'd been new houses built a little bit further on, and there were commuters going in and out from Galway, but it was lovely to be there. The water was the colour of tea because of the peat, but it was fresh and beautiful nonetheless. And my older cousin started swimming out to the lake in the middle while I waded in and looked longingly after them. My aunt could see that I wanted to be able to do the same, and that afternoon she worked with me, supporting me as I took my feet off the bottom and lay on my back with her arms around me, trusting her to hold me aloft, and finally trusting her to take her arms away and allow the water to support me. And I remember that first feeling of freedom, floating in that little bog lake in Connemara, looking up at the sky and feeling so much more at one with the water and the sky than I ever could wading along the bottom with my feet stumbling along the stones there. And to this day, lying on my back in open water, looking up at the sky, gives me one of the greatest feelings of exhilaration. And it all started with trusting my aunt to hold me, and then trusting the water to hold me. It can be difficult to trust, but it seems that the more one trusts in people, maybe in God, in the universe, the more one's capacity to trust grows. Ernest Hemingway wrote this: "The best way to find out if you can trust somebody is to trust them." The best way to find out if you can trust somebody is to trust them. At some stage, it's necessary to jump in with both feet and put one's trust in a person, in a community, in life itself. And so as swimmers dare to lie face to the sky and water bears them, so would I learn to attain free fall and float into Creator Spirit's deep embrace. So what does it mean to trust in the all-surrounding grace of Creator Spirit? Do you remember the gospel story about Jesus walking on the water in the storm? Peter sees Jesus coming across the water, and in a great act of faith and trust, he sets out on the water to meet Jesus. His trust is rewarded, and he finds himself walking on the surface of the lake towards Jesus. But the wind blows wilder, and he loses trust, and he begins to sink. Jesus reaches out and takes his hand and guides him back to the boat. This story is, I think, a great metaphor for the power of trust and also of the powerful effect of losing trust. But trusting in God or in the universe or in the capacities of the human being, it's not about being able to walk on water. It's not about trusting in some kind of Santa Claus of a God to hand out rewards to those who pray hard enough. Putting one's trust in God or the universe is akin to putting one's trust in one's own place in the universe. We can seem so incredibly insignificant the more we learn about the vastness of the universe. But trusting that divine spirit, which I truly believe there's a spirit of whatever God is, there is a spirit of that transcendence within each one of us. Trusting it to uphold and strengthen us, to meet the chances and changes of a life deeply lived. The more we trust in life, the more we're able to open our eyes to the opportunities of grace which pass around us all the time. The more we're able to claim our place at one with the universe and an essential part of it. Each one of us is an essential part of the universe. Trusting that God is in us, as Hermann Hesse believed the trees trusted, that God is in them. Trusting that our labor is holy and realizing that home is within each one of us. These are the ways in which we can achieve the equanimity we need to live fully and deeply. When trust is broken, it can seem for a while impossible to think of trusting again. But what is living without trust? It's a poor shadow of what life can be. So we already heard what Hermann Hesse thought about trees and trust. The children's author, Lemony Snicket, also had something to say about this. Deciding whether or not to trust a person is like deciding whether or not to climb a tree. Because you might get a wonderful view from the highest branch, or you might simply get covered in sap. And for this reason, many people choose to spend their time alone and indoors, where it's harder to get a splinter. So let us not live our lives indoors, avoiding splinters, but let us look to the wisdom of trees and embrace and trust in life and the universe. The more you trust, the more the world opens up to us. Trusting in the universe can allow us to live with an inner sense of the ultimate worthwhileness of it all. And sometimes losing that trust in the ultimate worthwhileness can happen, and it's a horrible place to be. Even during circumstances when our inner weather seems to be telling us that we can't trust, somehow finding that trust can help us through. But how do we go about finding this trust? It's all about making a decision. Deciding that we're going to live our lives based on a sense of trust, whether that is in God, in the universe, in the ultimate rightness of our place in the universe. The best way you can find out if you can trust somebody or something is to trust them. And in retrospect, I realize that it was that decision to trust that led me to where I am today, ministering to beloved communities of Unitarians, encouraging us all to minister to each other. In the 1990s and early 2000s, during some dark days of depression, which has been a continual sickness that I have struggled with, but which I have learned more and more about how to live with, during those times when feelings of futility were never far away, I continued to attend this church and was ministered to by Bill Darlison and the beloved community here. And this ultimately taught me to trust in God, in my place in the universe. And that's why I felt called to ministry. I felt the call to share that possibility of learning to trust, of deciding to trust within beloved spiritual community. You might very reasonably ask, what about when something really terrible happens? When a person's world completely falls apart, how can trust continue? The trust I'm talking about isn't a trust that life will be easy and happy all the time, but a trust in the ultimate worthwhileness of it. For a short term, I had the great pleasure of working alongside the Reverend Dr. Bill Shulls, an American Unitarian Universalist minister. He had for many years been director of Amnesty International USA. And I remember a story that he told about visiting a refugee camp in Somalia. He was being shown around the facilities of this place, crowded with thousands of people who had fled their homes and who had lost everything. He was introduced to one of the Somalian women there who had lost everything. He said to us, "It's difficult to know what to say to a person in this kind of situation." So he noticed that she was wearing a bright blue stone around her neck, and he asked her about it. And she replied, "This is me." And he checked with his translator, and she was not saying, "This is mine." She was saying, "This is me." And Bill interpreted this as meaning that that through all of the horror and deprivation that this woman had lived, she held on to the fact that ultimately she was a thing of beauty and a person who had a place in the universe, despite all the horrors. And so each one of us has a place in the universe, even though there are times when it may seem hard to believe. And it is this kind of trust, I think, that Denise Levertov is talking about in her poem. Despite all things that may indicate the contrary, we can learn to float into Creator Spirit's deep embrace, knowing no effort earns that all-surrounding grace, just as swimmers dare to lie face to the sky, and water bears them. Amen. I believe the offertory will now be taken, and then there may be some notices. The Usculpt for December is available on the table outside. The choir would welcome members to join them for the Christmas carol service. It's on the 15th of December, I presume at 11 o'clock. There will be a bake sale on the day, a raffle and a sale of crafts. If anyone has a donation that would suit as prizes, see Bridget. The Wednesday lunchtime reflection is at 1 o'clock, available in the church and online. Thank you to the cleaning crew who did a great job yesterday. The Walking Club, their next walk is on Saturday the 30th of November to the Miners' Village in Glendalough. Meet-up will be at the food trucks at Glendalough Upper Lake car park at 10:30 a.m. with the walk starting at 11 towards the Miners' Village, and a little or a lot depending on weather and members' stamina. Dress for cold weather and possibly wet weather. So that's meeting up at 10:30 on Saturday the 30th of November at the food truck at Glendalough Upper Lake. The book club meeting will take place on the last Wednesday of every month in the church vestry, 7:30 p.m. All are welcome. And the book club list for the next 2 months are as follows. November, Tom Lake by Anne Pratchett, and Hotel du Lac by Anita Bruckner. Great, lots of things going on. And we are going to sing again. We're going to sing of that time when even though life is difficult and hard, our life can flow on in endless song. It's one of my favourites, number 108. My life flows on in endless song, above earth's lamentations. And as we come towards the end of our service, let us resolve to go in peace, to live simply, gently, at home in ourselves. Let us act justly, speak justly. Let us remember the depth of our own compassion. Let us forget not our power in the days of our powerlessness. Do not desire to be wealthier than our peers, and stint not our hand of charity. Let us practice forbearance. Speak the truth or speak not. Let us take care of ourselves as bodies, for we are a good gift. Crave peace for all peoples in the world, beginning with yourselves. And go as you go, with the dream of that peace alive in your hearts. And we're going to sing a closing verse. It's on your printed sheet. May the road rise to meet us. Let's sing it through twice, and you might like to remain seated as we sing this gentle chant. May the road rise to meet us. We'll sing it through twice. We extinguish our chalice flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, nor the fire of commitment. May we carry these in our hearts until we meet again.